important points here are the wind-up of the hips and body, the extension of the left arm, and the cock of the wrist, indicated by the angle between the left arm and the shaft of the club.
Oh, my goodness. In your life have you seen anything like that?
This crowd has gone deadly silent. Cinderella story, out of nowhere, a former greenskeeper now about to become the Masters champion.
McConnell Buick GMC presents Southern Fairways Golf Radio Show. Here are your hosts, Randy Bergen and Danny Spivey.
Well, hey, 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 and a good afternoon to everybody out there in the golf world, and welcome to Southern Fairways Radio Show. I'm your host, Danny Spivey, today, and if you hear me introducing the show, that means one and one and only thing. My buddy and posse, Randall Bergen, is out playing golf somewhere. So anyway, while Randy's out on the course, he's actually in Houston, well, just outside of Houston right now, in Montgomery, Texas. We're going to hear from Randy. But while Randy's gone, I bring in the double Ds. Now we got triple Ds in here. Of course, my name's Danny Spivey, and welcome to the show. To my left right now, David Musial, GM of Glen Lakes down in Foley, Alabama. David, I appreciate you coming up here and visiting with me for a couple hours.
Hey, pleasure, Danny. Appreciate you inviting me up. That wonderful setting here at Steelwood, and always a pleasure to come up and visit with you, and appreciate you having me on today.
Well, you know, it's always one of those things. Whenever I have to do the show, David, I always do it at one place, and that's because it's a short commute for me. Of course, we're out here in Loxley, Alabama, at the beautiful Stewart Lodge, is located in the Steelwood community on the 16th hole of the beautiful Steelwood Golf Course. 16 right here is one of Randy's favorite holes because he can hit an iron off the tee and has that little uphill shot to a slope green, and he really enjoys that. Right across from me, I'll tell you what, here's the other third D in the group right now. Of course, a good buddy of ours. I've known this guy for a long, long time. He's been on the show several times. He's a radio personality, an internet personality, TV personality. We go way back to Tuscaloosa, way, way back. Of course, I'm talking about the one and only Doug Holton. Doug, thanks for being here.
My pleasure, Danny. Great to be here. Beautiful place, as you mentioned, and it's an exciting week in the time in the golf world with the FedEx Cup race ongoing. Greensboro is here, and great PGA Championship last week.
Well, and we're going to talk about all those things today. We're going to kind of go through the list of things. It's going to be a fast 2 hours, the fastest 2 hours on radio, as Randy likes to say. And we are going to, intermittently, guys, we're going to have Randy. He's out on the golf course. And let me explain exactly where Randy is right now, because he's doing a little business, okay? And of course, he does business on the golf course, like all good business people. But he's on this beautiful Lake Conroe. Are either of you familiar with where that is? It's in Montgomery, Texas.
Anybody haven't been there.
Never been there? Well, he sent me a couple different things, and they're playing, I believe his course is called Walden Golf Course, and he's out there with a cast of characters. Of course, he's got my cousin Vinny and Starkey in the game gang, and Tex, and a bunch of other guys that are out there playing golf with him. They played 36 holes yesterday. They probably played 36 the day before. They're playing 36 today, so my man Randall, if his golf game wasn't very good before, it should be good when he gets back. I'm sure he's having a ton of fun, but I can't wait for him to give us a call. And like I said, we're just going to patch him through whenever he comes in. Of course, Philip and Leanne are back at the home office taking care of the board for us as I get to press all these buttons here, and I hope they have the three-second delay on. So let's go down the litany of what we're going to talk about today. Of course, we're going to get a PGA Tour update from Doug over here as we're getting ready, like you said, for the FedEx Cup. Of course, we're in Sedgefield right now, a place that you know, the Wyndham Championship in Greensboro, North Carolina. Doug, you've been there several times. You actually covered it, I guess, years ago and been to the golf course a bunch of times.
Well, I grew up in Greensboro.
Did
as
you?
A kid.
Okay.
And in the 70s when the tournament was at Sedgefield before it moved to Forest Oaks. So lots of great memories of Greensboro, skipping school, going to the GGO. And actually, times were very different then. We, the marshals at the GGO were kids then, so we would go in there to the trailer. They'd give us a green jacket and a quiet please sign, and we'd head out to the whatever hole they told us and eat sandwiches all day.
Oh, gosh, that sounds so great. Uh-huh. Of course, one of our favorite segments, which we're going to do, and I'm going to try to find some good intro music for you, David, as we're going to do another edition. We usually do the usual minutes, But we got a Golf for Dummies segment today by David, and a fascinating. Do you want to tease that just a little bit?
Talk a little bit about the evolution of the driver.
The driver.
A little bit. Talking about what, why it's called a wood. Talk about how it has changed over time and what's made it more pleasurable for golfers to be able to have more forgiving sweet spot, and we'll talk about that shortly.
You know, it's such an interesting topic because I remember going back playing high school golf. I had a set of McGregor persimmon woods, which I think most everybody had at that time. And, of course, the laminated ping woods, the ping laminated wood came out. And then all of a sudden this tailor-made thing came out. You know,
swept the nation.
That swept the nation, and we got confused on what to call it. Is it a metal wood? Is it a wood? Is it? So I look forward to that. Of course, a lot of other golf going on right now. Of course, around the world we have the senior, the Champions Tour right now is playing the Bridgestone Senior Players Championship. We're going to get you caught up on that. Of course, the ladies just finished up. They had a playoff in the Aberdeen Standard Investments Ladies Scottish Open. We'll talk a little bit about that. American Stacey Lewis wins that in extra holes, so that's a spoiler alert, but it was playing live this morning. We'll talk about the FedEx Cup coming up. Talk a little bit about Colin Morikawa and his PGA Championship victory last week, which was
solid.
I got to tell you, I was so exciting coming down the line. Down towards the end of the thing, especially that number 16 hole, the drivable par 4. And, you know, a lot of people were just, you know, trying to figure everything out. We talked about it on the show where that was going to be a swing hole. And then, of course, the par 3, 17, and then 18 being a tough driving hole. And Colin Morikawa just showed what that kid's he's got a bright future, David.
Well, I tell you, he's solid. He's solid. And you look at where he stands right now in the FedEx Cup as far as in rankings, and that he's had a great year. And he just, the nerves didn't get to him at all. And it was the shot of the tournament there on 16, you know, hitting the drive up there close and making eagle. And he showed an awful lot as far as, you know, mentally being able to hold in there. And he feels like he's supposed to be there, as he said when he finished up. But what an exciting tournament. You know, when you have that many players close there at the end, it makes for a great finish.
Well, it really was, too. And, of course, with the comments in the press conference after Saturday night where Brooks Koepka was kind of taking a little dig at Dustin Johnson, and we talked a little bit about that. Did not fare too well on Sunday. Did not fare too well. And was anybody surprised? Doug, were you surprised by his performance on Sunday?
Well, I wasn't really surprised. Do you think Brooks would be in there, of course, with all the great things he's done? But he's had a little bit of problem with the knee this year, and he's kind of spotty, kind of off and on at times. But, you know, he's certainly in that mix. And Morikawa, you know, one of those three or four guys you're thinking right now, can he take over the game and dominate the way that somebody like Tiger did years ago? He certainly has that kind of talent.
Great swing.
Great really swing. Does. That was, yeah, you know, just move. a solid player. And Dustin Johnson, I thought, performed very admirably, you know, down the stretch and didn't give it away. He just got outplayed. I mean, when a guy on a PGA Tour in a major shoots 129 on the weekend.
Still 64 there in the last round.
Yeah. Usually do pretty well. Another real neat topic we're going to talk about, of course, the U.S. Amateur Finals are today. A little controversy a couple days ago in one of the semifinal matches. We're going to talk about that, about a ruling. David, I'm going to bring you in on that as well, where a caddy tested the surface in a bunker, and it could not have been at a worse time for the young man who was he was caddying for. Cost him the match, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. But in the finals today, Ollie Osborne. How about that? The SMU junior. A lot of people don't realize SMU has won five. Well, he's going to be try to become the fifth SMU player to win the U.S. Amateur. Of course, Hank Keeney back in 98. Colt Nost, who I played a lot of golf with back in 07. He won Kelly Kraft in 2011. And, of course, the one and only Bryson DeChambeau in 2015 went on. And, of course, he's going to be playing against a very stellar player in this finals match, Tyler Strafacci from Georgia Tech. An unbelievable. Both dads caddying for their sons today.
Oh, fun.
And I felt kind of bad for Strafacci, you know, when he was the beneficiary of the ruling against this young man, Segundo Pinto, with the penalty on the 18th hole in the semifinal match. But we'll talk more about that. In fact, I have an interview from Segundo Pinto talking about what happened on that 18th hole. So everybody stick around. We're going to try to get Randall on the phone here from Montgomery, Texas. So stay tuned here on Southern Fairways Radio Show. All right, and welcome back to Southern Fairways Radio Show. Like to thank all of our wonderful sponsors. Of course, one of our favorite sponsors right here next to me. Of course, Glenn Lakes, David Mutual, and the gang down there. And, of course, Jason Young, State Farm Insurance. He is my insurance guy now, and I am so pleased to have that. And, of course, some others. Of course, Boudreaux's Cajun Grill in Daphne, Alabama. Great to have them as a sponsor already. All right, back here live at Stewart Lodges in Loxley, Alabama, located on the beautiful Steelwood Golf Course, number 16th hole, overlooking this beautiful 250-acre lake. And I'll tell you what, guys, of course, I'm joined here to my left by David Mutual, general manager of Glen Lakes, and Doug Holton right across from me. And we had a lot to talk about. We're waiting on Randy. He's going to give us a call at some point. He is in Montgomery, Texas, playing on Lake Conroe, 36 holes today. He's doing business. He's doing
Texas
business.
Texas shootout.
Yes, it's a Texas shootout, exactly. 36 holes today, so I'm interested to see. Of course, he has all of our buddies. He's there with his golf buddies. You know, his West Coast correspondent, Vin Goodman. You know, I think Starkey was there, and I think he went home. We got Tex. We got a bunch of guys over there. He's going to tell us all about it, so I'm looking forward to that. But we got some business to get down to, and we're going to go. I don't have the music, but I'm going to try my best.
Whistle.
Here you go. Here you go. Dave, do you want to whistle some background music? You know, like this. It's time for your PGA Tour leaderboard update, brought to you by Bridgestone Golf and the GCGA Tour. Go ahead, Doug.
And, of course, the Wyndham Championships this week in Greensboro, North Carolina, Sedgefield Country Club. As we talked before, and Siwoo Kim is at the top of the board at 18 under with a great round yesterday. Doc Redman in second. Rob Oppenheim is in tied for second. And then Billy Horschel playing well at 15 under. Herman at 14 along with Hubbard. And a guy to keep an eye on maybe today, Webb Simpson at 13 under par. He is tied with Malnati. And then Duncan and Harold Varner at 12, along with the guy that just won the Payne Stewart Award, I think Zach Johnson,
yeah,
also at 12 under par. Kevin Kisner also in there at minus 12.
That's good stuff. That's going to be a definite shootout. I like this Oppenheim guy. He played a good round yesterday, put himself in, of course, trying to qualify for that top 125 to get mm-hmm. in as they start the FedEx Cup. On the Champions Tour, of course, the Bridgestone Senior Players Championship on top of leaderboard. They're in close to my hometown. They're in Akron, Ohio, right now, on top of leaderboard. How about this? At 2 under par. Of course, it's playing pretty hard, wow. David. Jerry Kelly's at 2 under. Woody Austin's at 1 under, along with Colin Montgomery, Scott Parrell. And then at +1 is Miguel Angel Jimenez, Scott Dunlap at +2, Ernie Els at +2. Well, they're going to finish up their round today. Of course, it's playing extremely, extremely difficult. And then, of course, I talked a little bit about the LPGA Tour as they were in the Aberdeen Standard Investments Ladies Scottish Open, where one American, Stacey Lewis, wins in a playoff against Cheyenne Knight, Azahara Munoz, and Emily Kristen Pedersen. And Stacey Lewis birdies the first hole of the playoff to take home the coveted crown there. So there is your PGA Tour update, brought to you by Bridgestone Golf and the GCGA Tour.
I see your man Dickie Pride's not too far out on the Champions Tour.
Yeah, you know, he came out of the gate pretty well. I was texting him this past week, and we have a little group that texts each other, and Dickie had thumb surgery, and he recuperated rather well, and he played real well the first couple rounds. I think he was +1 or +2 after two rounds. And then this golf course, though, I'll tell you guys, it is something else. It is
playing firm. I watched a little of that, and as far as the greens are really firm. Well, I tell you, the shots coming in, the guys having a hard time holding greens. Is watching, you know, couples and ills shots coming in. Those guys can get it up there in the air and come down and still struggling with, you know, being able to hold up. They got it playing tough. They really do.
There is no doubt about that. Of course, we will take your phone calls if you want to call in. We're going to give some golf away here before too. Well, I'll tell you what, Dave, do we want to go ahead and give a little
golf? Let's do
We're
it.
Contractually obligated.
Let's do it.
You want to do a five-pack down to Glen Lakes?
Do a five-pack to Glen Lakes.
All right, so Philip, Leanna.
Good shape right now.
We're going to take the fifth phone call. You can just text me who wins. You can call us at 343-0106, 343-0106. Fifth phone call gets a five-pack. We'll pay for the golf. You pay for the cart. And if you're lucky, you'll get to bump elbows with David Mutual. That's the official welcoming now. I love it. I love it. Of course, don't forget that the Southern Fairways magazine is out on the shelves. A beautiful magazine. There are so many great things, a lot of things about Branson, Missouri. Of course, Joey Johnson, our editor-in-chief over there at that magazine, does such a great job. And a lot of great articles in there. A couple things about different forms of transportation out on the golf course that are trending now with the little motorcycle look at things or the golf boards. Very nice. I got a little recipe in there about a Philly cheesesteak out of a crock pot that I perfected during the pandemic quarantine. And I was a crock pot machine, Doug.
Were you?
Oh, yeah. Just all day. All day.
I like that.
Every morning I start up and go 8 to 10 hours, just throw something in there and go do what I need to do. But And some other good things. And, of course, the GCGA Tour, we talked about it last week. We will be going over to Shell Landing here in just a little while. First time the GCGA Tour has moved out of the state of Alabama. Great. Over there to see the gang, Kenny Hughes and the gang over there. And always a nice little trip over there. And Randy and I have promised not to get sidetracked the night before when we go over there.
A little gambling junket, maybe.
A little gambling junket, maybe, possibly. As we call it, noodle soup, affectionately. On our golf show. But I do want to talk a little something about before, and we're going to get into, we're going to do a Golf for Dummies segment on the next segment, David. But right. I want to go, and I want to talk a little bit about this U.S. Amateur. And I'm so fascinated. Of course, growing up in junior golf, trying to qualify for it. USGA events are so hard to qualify for. And you look at this matchup against SMU's Ollie Osborne, who's a junior. He's 20 years old, against Tyler Stravacci, who is a world-class player. They're both very, very highly ranked amateur players. And both of their dads are caddying for them in the finals. Now, one of the neat things about getting into the finals is you get an automatic bid or invitation to play in the 2021 U.S. Open if you remain an amateur. You're more than likely as well to get an invitation to play in the 21-21 Masters tournament. So when those young men were confronted in their post-match wins, they both got pretty emotional about it, David. And you and I, growing up playing golf and doing some things, you know, it's one of those things to play in a major as an amateur. It's a pretty special thing.
Oh, something else. And, you know, and these guys that you're looking at tour, you know, potential tour players, you know, and it's an exciting to see, an exciting time in these players' lives and how hard they work at it and put all the practice time and everything into it. That, yeah, it's a really special thing.
Good stuff. Well, congratulations to Gene Stuckey of Mobile. He wins the 5-pack, David. I'll send you all that information. Congratulations, Gene. You're going to love it. You take 4 of your buddies and yourself down there. Dave will take good care of you. I'm going to try to play some audio. Now, something happened in the Stravacci in the semifinal match, or to get in, excuse me, get in the round of 8 in this USAM. And on the 18th hole, I'll try to set it up. Stravacci and this young man, Segundo Pinto, were all tied going into the 18th hole. It's a par 5, and if anybody's been watching this tournament on TV, the Bandon Dunes has been a superstar. Mm-hmm. It is a very picturesque golf course on the Oregon coast in Bend. Very tough, almost link style, if you want to call it that. Dunes all over the place. You know, very, you know, a lot of hidden shots and everything. Well, 18's a par 5. They're both going on all tied, and Pinto hit his third shot into a greenside bunker. And what ensued, and I was watching this, David and Doug, live on television, and I saw the caddy, who was a local caddy for the young man Pinto, go down into the bunker, and they showed it live on television. And he bent over, and he wiped some of the sand away from the base of the bunker. And one of the things that was going on is because the commentators were talking about the wind was blowing so hard, it was actually blowing sand out of the bunkers throughout the golf course. So this local caddy went down in there, and you know, his nickname as a course caddy is Pinocchio. I'm not going to go there. That's a nickname that's going out there. But yeah, he went down there. When Stravacci, Tyler Stravacci, whose father was caddying for him, saw it and called it on him. So he said, you're not allowed to test the surface. And so they brought the rules official over, and they talked about it. And, of course, everything's on video now, guys. Mm-hmm. And they have an overhead view of the caddy down there who was trying his best to deny it. I don't blame him for trying to deny it. You know, it's one of those things, you're stuck. All right. And then he kind of admitted that he moved some sand at this one spot. Well, anyway, they had him. And I'm going to play this interview of the young man, Segundo Pinto, after that happened.
As soon as I get back there, the referee comes up and asks my caddy what happened. And I'm completely shocked because I'm like, I'm just trying to get this shot near and try to make an up and down and win the match. And apparently he touched his hand or something. And
this that isn't on the player, but it's his caddy, who, as you heard Craig Winter describe, is just like the player treated in this instance, because he can relay any information to his player. And that was just unquestionable.
Well, that's a penalty is a hole, so I mean the match ended there.
Well, there you go, guys. And it was very sad because in stroke play, Dave, and we're gonna talk about this rule a little bit, I believe it's 12.1, which is you cannot test the surface of a bunker.
Right.
You know, or a penalty area. You're not allowed to. And in match in stroke play, it would be a two shot penalty. Unfortunately, this was match play and the penalty is loss of hole. And they were tied on the 18th hole, so the loss of hole caused him to lose the match. So,
tough time for it to happen.
It was a tough time. I feel for him. Hopefully something good happens to him. And maybe he needs, or that caddy needs, to come back on and listen to this next segment as we do Golf for Dummies when we come back here on Southern Fairways Radio Show. We'll be right back, folks. All right, and welcome back to Southern Fairways Radio Show, right here live in Locksley, Alabama. It's the Stewart Lodges, specifically in the Executive Lodge, here on the beautiful Steelwood Golf Course and Community. And I am getting texted, gang. Of course, I'm joined here by General Manager David Musial of Glen Lakes and my buddy Doug Holton. I'm getting texted all over the place. And Randall's going to get on us with us here in about 15 minutes, guys, about 12 minutes till one Randall Burger comes out here. So I thought it would be a perfect time. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to try my best here, David. I don't know what this is going to sound like, but I'm going to try it. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this segment of Golf for Dummies, brought to you by Bridgestone Golf and RGB Marketing. Here's your host, David Musial.
That's pretty good.
That went too bad.
I like that.
A little combination of Western and Leave It to Beaver, maybe?
Yeah. I like it. All right, David, what do we got? We were talking about, you teased it in the first segment, talking about the evolution of woods.
Several weeks ago that we talked a little bit about, had a caller that came in and said, why are they called woods? And that'll kind of date you a little bit. You know, I'm in a junior golf clinic and with my kids, and they look at me and they say, Coach David, why is this called a wood? You know, when I first started playing golf, it was made out of wood. Your drivers are fairway woods, 3-wood, 5-wood, 7-wood, whatever we might have there, all made out of either persimmon or they were laminated heads. As time went on, we got to about the mid-80s, and that there was this heads that were starting to be made out of metal. And these metal heads provided a more forgiving golf club. That toe and heel hit that we used to hit with a Hogan Speed Slot Apex driver, and you know that heel and toe hit just didn't give us that shot that we'd start getting with the metal wood. Mm-hmm. And so you started seeing players, then tour players, start to experiment. Started seeing the mid-80s Fred Couples with TaylorMade starting to put one in his bag, the fairway wood. So that's where things started going with the metal wood. And then they started going to the drivers. And, you know, by the time we got to the late 80s, it was just very few on the PGA Tour. Davis Love was one still playing with a persimmon driver. Mm-hmm. Greg Norman late in the 80s playing with a persimmon driver. Nicholas. And then it went to a point of where that they looked at what these other guys were doing with the metal heads and being able to hit the ball longer and being able to have a better miss hit with their shot. As we moved along, we got to the mid-90s, and titanium is what started taking over, where we couldn't get that metal steel head in a larger size because it was too heavy.
Right.
So now we've got this lightweight material and this titanium where we can make the heads larger and larger. Well, that revolutionized golf. Everyone went from that point of the mid-90s up to 2000 of switching to a titanium driver. The size of that head made it where it was worth the trade-off to go with a longer shaft so you could hit the ball farther, mm-hmm. the larger head to give you more forgiveness. And what happened was all players started going to this. USGA specifications now are a 460cc head. Now, what that means for listeners out there, that's cubic centimeters. That's the largest that it can get.
Okay.
Now, it can change as far as heel to toe size, as far as how deep the head gets, but that's as large as it can get. Now, so you see that today, that's the same size head as some of them that you saw 20 years ago. It's not going to get any bigger, okay, within USGA specifications. Now, as far as how hot the head can come off, you hear hotter heads and different type of heads, and what is called the COR, that is the coefficient of restitution. That is how fast the spring-like effect where the ball can come off the club. Well, that hasn't changed in over 20 years. So the fastest that it can come off when you hit a golf ball, when that club catches the face, that is 83% of that energy transfer back, goes back out in the golf ball. So it can't come all the way in like a 100% like the trampoline and go straight up. 83% is as much as that energy can transfer. Well, what that does is that extra the spring-like effect mm-hmm. is what gives us the distance. Well, that's maxed out. So now where we are is we can change the lofts, we can change the positioning of the weights in the heads, we can position whether it's open or closed more to help us to get the club face square, and one of the biggest things is the shaft. As far as being able to have the proper shaft for your club head speed, and you know most players are playing with something that's 45 or 46 inches long to maximize longer shaft, hit it in the center of the club face, ball's going to go farther. But so really over the last 20 years, that it can't come off any hotter than it has, and the club can't get any bigger. So what we're changing is lofts, positioning, how the club face can be open or closed, and that's why fitting is so critical. Because if you're playing with a golf club that where your launch is too low, it could be costing you as much as 20 yards in distance. As far as your club face being at a square club face, whether it's a draw where you're having a draw setting or a square setting where you get that ball straight versus an open club face, those old drivers, Danny, like we used to play with, Doug, if you hit it open club face with that persimmon club, the ball might go with the driver. If you have 100 miles an hour club head speed, it may only go 200 yards.
Yeah.
Well, today's club, it goes a whole lot farther. You're looking at 25, 30 yards longer. So that's the evolution of the driver, and it'll be interesting to see what is next, because it can't come off any harder or get any bigger. So what's going to be the next thing? And tour players show us that they don't need it. But as amateur golfers and, as far as the average golfer, everybody would like to be able to hit it farther.
Well, I'll tell you what. That was our Golf for Dummies, brought to you by Boone's Kitchen and Unleaded Gasoline. That was fascinating, David.
But you can't call it a fairway metal anymore now. Is it a fairway titanium? What is it? A lot of them are fairway metals. A lot of them do, but it's not a fairway wood anymore.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you didn't have any idea of the history of the wooden club going into the metal composite and the titanium, you now have graduated from Golf for Dummies in that segment to having a master's degree in coefficients.
Did they change the spring effect when the metal clubs came in?
I think it's 1998 uh-huh. is when that was, when it became the as far with that.
They increased the it a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, it's max there. And golf clubs manufacturers could make it more, but it's not conforming. There's a list of, in the USGA, you can go on the website, of conforming golf clubs, uh-huh. what is and what isn't. And there are some out there that that can get more spring-like effect. But it never has taken off a golf club for any popularity that is not USGA conforming. Mm-hmm.
You know? Well, and I think that's the thing. And now I do want to ask you a funny question, because you have a really neat community in Glen Lakes over there, and you have a bunch of private golf carts. You have some of our snowbirds that come down, and they're, and let's just face it, some people of a certain age, they just don't like change, Doug, David. And do you see any wood persimmon wood clubs out there anymore at all with some of the old codgers that come running around there?
That's a great question, and I consider a senior 50 and up. You and I,
yeah,
70 and up is super senior.
Super senior,
and,
okay.
And they're not afraid to go with the new technology. They're not afraid.
Yeah.
I can go out there and fit them and show them the difference when they play a senior light shaft of what they can do distance-wise versus the old clubs. And I did have a lesson with a young man. He was a good player in his time, and he was away from the game for almost 20 years, and he came out, and he had a persimmon head. Mm-hmm. And he hit the ball pretty good. Went for a while, and I said, let me let you try some of the new technology or the newer technology. And he said, this is just like cheating. Let me get one. You know, I don't think there's any question at all that as far as with just telling the difference with it. But, no, all of our super seniors, they'll pull the trigger on the new stuff. And new product is doing well.
You know, it's so funny listening to you know, thinking back about using old persimmon wood or laminated drivers. And I'll never forget, I worked in a small golf store when I was in high school called U.S. Golf. It was in a big mall. It was probably one of my favorite jobs because it was in a mall, Doug. And when I had a break, I used to walk to the food court. And, you know, let's just say there was a young lady that worked in a shoe store that had my eye.
You might want to visit with.
Let's just say that. So, but one of the things I did learn is we did minor club repair, regripping and everything. And one of the main things we used to do was re-whip.
Yeah,
I knew how
those
to
persimmon drives, a re-whipping
yes.
tool.
Uh-huh.
I had.
Exactly.
That's funny you mentioned yeah. that because one of the things I remember is I went into I can't remember the golf shop when I was in high school and I bought a Tony Pena
mm-hmm.
persimmon.
It was a hot head.
Yeah. And the head was a little loose, and he said, "Well, you might want to get it redone." I did it, and I kept that driver for until the TaylorMades came out.
Yeah.
But that'd be a neat tournament to have, a flashback tournament where you play with the old clubs.
Interesting you yeah. say that Brant Snedeker played, this was about 5 years ago, played at Sea Island, a morning round with a 1982 set and an afternoon round with current technology. Mm-hmm. And he shot 82 in the morning and 70 in the afternoon. And he said, it's, you know, it's not completely relative because he hit it better in the afternoon round also. But he said, when I hit it off center with that Bellotta ball
yeah.
with the persimmon head, he said, I hit some tee shots that were I cut and they didn't go anywhere. They went 200 yards. And he said when they got up into the wind, it was even worse. But you had that the golf ball, you know, as far as that bold Bellotta ball, you breathe on it the wrong way, it cuts.
Yeah.
Oh, you can move it all over the place.
And so much spin to it, and the balls today are, you know, that's a big change. They don't think they spin quite as much, but the durability is incredible mm-hmm. in
so,
the distance.
So, David, in your opinion, you know, when we hear Jack Nicklaus talk, you know, about, you know, kind of modifying the game back a little bit to kind of – and it's not out of being afraid of records or major or any of that stuff. It comes out of just run out of real estate, basically.
Right.
I mean, you can only make golf courses so long. There's only so much you can do. You know, turning a 6,800-yard golf course into a 7,800-yard golf course is a big ordeal. And do you think there's more in this technology boom in, let's say, the last 35 years, okay, that we talk about, or 40 years, is it the golf club or is it the golf ball?
I think the golf ball. Your clubs, all manufacturers are making their lofts stronger, and mm-hmm. Especially like our seniors, they like it where, I can hit the 9-iron, which was a 7-iron loft. But your golf ball is really superior to what it was.
Yeah.
It really is.
I've never gotten used to that. And, you know, in high school, I hit my 7-iron 150 yards, mm-hmm. and now it's 20 yards different. But I've still not gotten used to that.
I used to love breaking out the old new Pro Stats. Mm-hmm. You know, new pro staff out of the sleeve. Yeah. Well, that was a fascinating segment, and I'll tell you, it just keeps. I'm like you, anticipating what's in the future. Of course, the composites of shafts now, and different load torques, and you know, how do you work through launch monitors and fittings and all this if you're a 20 handicap versus a Bryson DeChambeau who's swinging at, you know, 120-something miles per hour, which is really unbelievable if you think about it. But you know what? Golf's one of those games, just like bowling. You know, if there's a better bowling ball out there, trust me, people are buying it.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I think it's on the tour level. I think exactly what you're talking about with what Jack Nicklaus is saying is that, you know, some of the old great golf courses that, you know, become obsolete for us to play majors on and play tour events because they're just shorter. And having to lengthen them to continue to be able to play is what the ones that are still out there. If these guys out there, they hit the ball so far. Watching DeChambeau hit a golf ball, it's unbelievable. And like Doug, we talked about, that those guys do hit some balls offline. When you're swinging 130-mile-an-hour club head speed and the club face is open, look out. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to lose it, you know, lose that ball offline. But it's amazing that, you know, the top players in the world, how far they can hit that ball.
Wouldn't that be neat to kind of play around with that idea at Jack's place,
yeah,
at Muirfield Village when they get the new course done, see if they can – play with a new ball or kind of dial the clubs back or whatever you want to do.
I'd like to see 10 top professionals go to Pine Valley up in New Jersey and play
1980 equipment.
1980 yeah. equipment and play 6,500 yards.
Yeah.
Low score, $10 million.
That'd be fun.
Talk about that a little bit. We're also going to go over the official world golf ranking coming up, and one Randall Bergen is going to be calling in, hopefully, from Montgomery, Texas. Stay tuned here on Southern Fairways. Oh, yeah, going way back, way back. Oh, love it, of course. Thank you for joining us back here on Southern Fairways Radio Show. I am your host today, Dan Spivey, along with my good buddies David Musial of Glen Lakes, my other buddy Doug Holton. And if you're wondering where Randall is, he's in Texas. But guess where else he is, guys? He's on the phone right now. I think we got him. Randall, you there, buddy?
I am right here, Dan.
So, let me ask you something, bud. What hole are you on, and where do you stand in the match?
Well, right now we're on 18, about to tee off. Nice little par 4, waterfront. I tell you, this track is really, really a testy little track. A lot of water, Dan. I sent you, sent you some pictures and everything. But it's been fun. This is a fun place to play. I'm telling you, if you ever find yourself out in Montgomery, Texas, come play Walden on Lake Conroe. It is a fun track to play with. Playing with some guys and having a good time. It's been interesting. It's been interesting to say the least. But listening to you boys, got the triple D's going on today. That's pretty impressive. And I got to tell you, I like the new sponsor, Economy Fuel. I like that.
Economy Fuel. Yeah, I was, you know me, Randall. I didn't take my medicine before the show. But talking about your who you got out there with you, tell me the cast of characters that are playing in your group today.
Not sure I heard you completely, but I think you should talk about some of the characters. Well, there's some Texas boys over here, and playing with a couple of firefighters, and they playing with a United Airlines inspector, and so just some interesting folks playing with. And of course, Ben is out here. Now, we're playing golf, but you know this is a business trip because hopefully something is going to be coming down the pipe pretty soon that we'll be able to share with everyone. But, I mean, it's been fun. And obviously coming to these places and playing a new course and meeting these new guys is always a thrill.
Well, I don't know if you heard, got to listen in between hitting shots. I know it's kind of tough, but listen to David's Golf for Dummies and the evolution of the wood into the metal drivers and everything. And we were talking at break about, when we used to have those persimmon head woods and getting them refinished and new screws in them and re-whipping them. When you started playing golf, Randy, let me just ask you this. Right now, could you imagine playing out there on that golf course with a persimmon-headed driver and an old golf ball?
No, I can't. That would be, but it would be fun to do again sometime, I believe. So, hey, look here. I got to go ahead and tee off. These guys are waiting on me. So I'll check back in with you next hour. Y'all sounding great, though.
All right,
keep up the good work.
All right, buddy. All right, have fun. Make a putt. All right, there he is. Oh, David, Doug, you just got to love Randy. You know, he's out there. He's working it. You know, and David, you've played with him before. Doug, have you played golf with Randy?
Oh, yeah, we played a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago. Randy loves to play golf, and he takes it serious, and he likes to channel, and I'm working with him a little bit. Showed him one of the things that Jackson's working on, taking the club, getting a yardage stick or whatever, or an alignment stick and putting it at a certain angle to get the club outside on the takeaway and setting the hands inside, mm-hmm. coming from inside, developing that lag feel to release the club, get a little bit more power. And Randy likes to channel his inner Freddie Couples, you know, and he sees it in his head.
Very inner.
Yeah, it may not look like it from the outside, but I see it. When he does it, I see what he's trying to do. And I was like, there you go. There you go right there.
Freddie Couples.
But I'm sure he's having a lot of fun. All right, let's switch over to the official world golf ranking. Well, week 32. This is through August 9th right now. And I don't know if they just came out with a new one, but John Rahm was top of the leader or top of the world golf ranking with 8.78 points. Right behind him, Justin Thomas at 8.77. And I don't know if that's been updated this week. It may update tomorrow. But rounding out that top 10, of course, number three, Rory McIlroy. Number four, Dustin Johnson off of his PGA Tour or PGA Championship victory. Colin McIlroy goes from 12th to number five in the world. Webb Simpson goes from four down to six. Brooks Koepka goes from six to seven. Bryson DeChambeau at eight. Patrick Reed, who just made birdie to get to 11 under par, he is in ninth position. And then there's Adam Scott. He's just quiet, David. Mm-hmm. You know, he's been playing a lot of good golf the last about two and a half, three years. He's been playing a lot better golf, but does it very quietly how he's moved up basically in the top 10 in the world again.
And his putting's gotten a little more consistent. He's not there 100%, but he's, you know, a lot better. And I think that he's, you know, he's just a step away from catching a major. He's, you know, he's played well over the last couple of years, but I think that's getting confidence in, you know, in a technique and, you know, sticking with something is important.
Absolutely. Doug, what do you think about at the end of the year? Now, at the beginning of the year, I made a prediction. We did our New Year's resolutions, and I predicted that John Rahm would reach number one just because he was trending that way. I think at the time he was ranked number six in the world. And, of course, he's gotten to number one, the first Spaniard in a long time to do that. When you look at somebody like a Bryson DeChambeau, and this is what I'm going to ask you as you follow golf, with all the dynamics he's changed and all the things, you know, with the swing speed, the weight, the different mentality of playing golf, he's going to increase his putting performance. That's one of his goals. And then increase his driving performance and distance. He feels that if he drives the ball further than everybody else and he limits his putting to a certain percent, you know, increases putting percentage to a certain percentage, increases by about 6.5% and inside 10 feet, that he'll reach the number one player in the world status. How long do you think it's going to take him?
Whew, that's a good question. There's a lot of good players up there. Will he ever make it to the top? You know, the interesting thing to me about Bryson is he drives it a long way now. Of course, he looks like one of the guys on the long drive contest. Mm-hmm. And, you know, putting is pretty good, I guess. But the interesting thing to me is the short irons with the shaft length. You know, he seems like he struggles with that a little bit with the wedges and the nine irons at some point, getting those close enough to the hole, especially coming out of the rough sometimes where he drives it. But I don't know. Bryson is an interesting character and obviously talented player, a different personality. I'm not sure if he'll make it to number one.
Mm-hmm. He's got a lot of people, David, to move it in front of. You know, you look like a Brooks Koepka. I think Brooks has, you know, short-term memory loss. I think that final round of PGA Championship is just going to go by the wayside. I think he's going to be ready for the trip up to New York. I don't know how he's going to fare, to be honest with you, in the FedEx Cup playoffs. I don't think he really even cares. As sad as that sounds, and I think that's one of the skinnies against him that drives people a little crazy, especially somebody like me. When you look at winning percentages and to be compared in history, where he had a chance to become, you know, one player in modern era to win three consecutive PGA championships, he already has two consecutive U.S. Opens, and to get to a point where that winning percentage in his majors is about 20-21%, but 7% on the regular PGA Tour, where you look at a Nicklaus and a Woods, they're about that 20-22% across the board for their whole careers. And I think that shows, you know, the true difference between the two types of players. To move in front, for a Bryson DeChambeau to move in front of somebody like a Koepka or a DJ or a Rory or Justin Thomas or a John Rahm, he's going to have to go on a pretty good run, and it's going to have to include a major win.
Well, I think that you look at someone like Dustin Johnson versus Koepka for week in and week out, that there's more intensity to Dustin Johnson than Koepka. I mean, obviously, by looking at the numbers, that he's not
He's focused. Kepka's focused on those majors and those week-to-week events. I just think he's just not quite there. Whereas DeChambeau and Dustin Johnson, you look at where they are week after week. I think that it's interesting to see DeChambeau, whether you like him or not. It's very interesting to see what he's doing. And I'm just like you, Doug, as far as the distance he hits the ball. If you can hit the ball that far, and then he starts to where that he can find the fairways and keep it in play on a consistent basis with that distance, that's where it's going to happen. And I think he can. And he's going to analyze those numbers and figure out where it is. Where I'm looking at it, that if he hit it 20 yards shorter, but he kept the ball in the fairway, and then he can spin the ball with the wedges and those short clubs, versus trying to hack something out of the rough. That I think that he's got to, he'll figure. Figure all that out. But the work ethic is there, and I think his intensity level is. I think he could.
What, does he hit a 5-degree driver? Is that right?
I think he moved it down to 5-degree. I think his putter actually has just as much loft as his driver.
I just was wondering, like a 1-iron for DeChambeau. Does he carry that? Does anybody carry that anymore? Seems like it'd be a great club for him.
Yeah.
It's a 5-degree driver.
Yeah. Know? And it's amazing how high he can hit it, too.
It is phenomenal that he can hit the ball that high with that low loft. Mm-hmm. That really, it tells you something about that speed, because that speed's creating backspin and throwing the ball in the air. That's amazing, a good
protein shake.
Well, guys, I'll tell you what, this first hour has been a lot of fun. We've got another hour coming up. We're going to hear from Randy again. Of course, I hope he's got his bets right. Now, the thing I'm not concerned about, Randy, is he's not going to get himself in trouble with betting too much, because he's got some good backup with him. And so he's going to be just fine. But we're going to talk in the second hour. We're going to talk a little bit more about the PGA Tour schedule coming up with the FedEx Cup as we get into the playoffs leading to Atlanta, and then talk about some of the future majors. We'll do maybe a golf tip, give some more golf away. And, Doug, maybe we'll talk a little football, see what's going on in the NCAA and who's going to play and who's not going to play.
Yeah, looks like we might have half the country playing and half not.
There you go, buddy. Well, let's stay tuned for the second hour as we turn to the back nine on Southern Fairways Radio Show. We'll be right back.
The important points here are the wind-up of the hips and body, the extension of the left arm, and the cock of the wrist, indicated by the angle between the left arm and the shaft of the club.
Oh, my goodness. In your life have you seen anything like that?
This crowd has gone deadly silent. Cinderella story, out of nowhere, a former greenskeeper now about to become the Masters champion.
McConnell Buick GMC presents Southern Fairways Golf Radio Show. Here are your hosts, Randy Bergen and Danny Spivey.
All right, and welcome to the Back Nine, the second hour of Southern Fairways Radio Show. We are live here in Locksley, Alabama, at beautiful Stewart Lodges, located in the Steelwood community, on the beautiful Steelwood Country Club Golf Course. I'm your host, Danny Spivey. I am taking over the reins today for my buddy, Randy Bergen, who we talked to earlier in the first hour. He is in Montgomery, Texas, playing a little golf with some buddies and doing a little business out there. We're going to hear from Randy sometime during this second hour. But while Randy's gone, I've got the other two double Ds with me. And that's the guy to my left here. Of course, the general manager, director of golf, PGA professional extraordinaire, the one and only David Musials from Glen Lakes. David?
I tell you what, this is a great setting here. Appreciate you having me here. The first hour went by real fast, and appreciate everybody listening in. There's not a prettier setting than this here at Steelwood. That's great.
Oh, it is absolutely beautiful. And across from me right now, one of my good old buddies goes way back to Tuscaloosa. And I used to watch this guy, David, on the local news doing the sports. And he is a TV, internet, radio personality, good buddy of mine, Doug Holton. Doug, you remember way back when you hosted, you did a tryout for a sportscast, amateur sportscasting contest, where you opened it up. And so, what was that channel in Tuscaloosa that you were on?
Channel 33.
Channel 33.
Yeah. Turned into ABC 3340 now. Uh-huh. In Birmingham, they combined Channel 33 with Channel 40 in Anniston and made the channel in Birmingham. So,
I'm trying to remember what year that was that you opened up. And David, it was a fascinating story. I don't know if you've ever heard this, but they had Doug had opened up where they were going to let an amateur sportscaster come out. And they did these auditions.
You know where the story ends.
Okay. So they open it up, and it's all over the news. We're watching. It says, come on down. You sign up, and you go and you do a little demo and yep. everything right there in the TV station. And so all my buddies down at Harry's Bar, of course, which was my my second home during those years, they talked me into going down there. I went and met Doug, and I did a little two-minute reading or whatever, and probably just kind of stumbled, bumbled around it, with it. And then Doug announced it live on one of the broadcasts that I had won that.
Danny Spivey.
How about that?
Had won. So I went and did the live sports broadcast with Doug's tutoring, of course, live.
That helped you a lot, didn't it?
Yeah, it helped me a ton. It gave me even more notoriety than I already had. But
I meant the tutoring.
The tutoring did great. The tutoring.
Look at where he is today, filling in.
Sitting here filling in for my buddy Randy. No, but just welcome everybody back to the show. We had such a great first hour. We're going to talk about a few things in the second hour. Of course, David, I want to thank you for your Golf for Dummies in the first hour. We're going to get a golf tip from you here before too long in one of these segments. And then, I'll let you kind of think about it. I want to talk a little bit about possibly when you're watching a U.S. amateur out in Bend, Oregon at Bandon Dunes, the wind is blowing so uncontrollably. It's blowing gusts of 25, 30 miles an hour with sustained 15 to 18 miles per hour. And down there at your golf course at Glen Lakes, especially on that Dunes course, that wind can whip up a pretty good bit down there for some reason. And it just kind of comes through that foley area through your golf course. And I maybe want you to sit and think about maybe a tip for some of our average golfers that like to play, have to play in the wind, because I think the wind does damage to a lot of people's psyche mm-hmm. when they get out there. And I'm sure you have a good tip. And Doug, I'm going to tell you what, we have, right behind, of course, we talk golf first on this show. And, but we also like to talk football. And, where we are in the state of college football during this pandemic and everything going on with COVID-19, everybody's trying to be safe and make the proper decisions. College football is a $6 billion business. It's even bigger, for different conferences. And I know, Doug, that I believe the Big Ten and the Pac-10 have made just some decisions already.
Yes, and it'll be interesting to see with the golf season we have in the fall, will we have a college football season? As you mentioned, the Pac-12 and the Big Ten – this week postponed their college football season. The ACC, the SEC, and the Big 12 have yet to announce. So I'm not sure why the Pac-12 and the Big 10 were in such a hurry to announce. They still have a couple of weeks of play time here, but practice is set to begin this week, I think, for Alabama and Auburn and the SEC schools. So, we'll see if any press releases come out on Monday. Who knows what's going to happen?
Well, I know there's a lot of us, and the president has weighed in on this, and this tweet just simply said, play college football.
Yeah.
And I think it is one of those things, whichever side of the fence you stand on politically, it doesn't matter to any of us sitting at this table, but I know one thing down in the Deep South and in the SEC, and as well as my friends and brothers and sisters up in Ohio, me growing up an Ohio State fan, it really saddened me to see that the season was postponed. I think Ohio State had a really good chance this year. They had a great team, a lot of great players coming back, a great coach, and a great new philosophy going in. And I know all my buddies up there are extremely disappointed about that. So it should be interesting to see if we only go to conference championships. I'm sure with these other, Big Five conferences, half of them not going to be playing. There's not going to be any national championship or anything like that, or how are we going to do that. But I know down here we certainly hope to see some college football, even if it's modified somehow.
Yeah, and I thought interesting comments by Coach Saban, I guess a week ago or something, when he said, why are we talking about, are we going to play college football? Shouldn't we be talking about, are we going to go to school or not? First of all.
Sure.
Are they going to have school at Alabama and Auburn and in the SEC? He said the guys aren't going to catch the virus on the football field. If they catch the virus, they're going to catch it on campus. So, I think they're going to play. I think the SEC is going to play this fall, the conference-only schedule, and then I guess we won't have a championship after that. but we'll see what happens.
Lee, I have a good friend whose son is just enrolled at Auburn University. Of course, David, is your daughter still at Clemson?
She's at graduate school at Clemson. That she's up there now, just got moved in this week. It does look like the ACC is going to play. Mm-hmm. It looks like that we will have the Big 12, the ACC, and the SEC. And with that, what happens as far as past our conference champions, bowl season? What is going to happen there? And, it's real unfortunate for the Big Ten and Ohio State. Anybody wants to knock the Big Ten, that the kind of team that Ohio State has, Justin Fields, you just kind of wonder what's going to happen when they talk about playing spring football, because then what does that throw off for the balance for the next year?
Well, we have a fall champion and a spring champion.
Hey, you could, but are those spring teams going to play again in the fall the same way? It's tough. And with having high school football starting this week, a lot of excitement for that. But then you don't have Big Ten, Pac-12 playing. Yeah, it's kind of tough. But I think we need sports in this country. I think that safety first, but we've got to try to continue to do everything we can with using the proper sanitation methods. And good to see golf going. I think that things are going pretty well. I was crossing my fingers that no one tested positive there, toward the end, or somebody that's leading or have a problem. And that's what I think you could see happen at some point. But
yeah, and I think golf has kind of set the table, really, with playing these tournaments without the fans. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned, I think last time I was on the show, Danny, it doesn't really bother me to watch a golf tournament without the fans. It's not the same, but I think college football could do the same thing. A lot of people are sitting at home with nothing on the tube, I'd love to watch a college football game even without the fans there.
Well, it's an interesting dilemma. I think all of our heads spin because we brought up some good points here. When Coach Saban talked about school, a lot of virtual school going on these college campuses. Does that stop them from going out partying together?
No.
Wouldn't have stopped me, I guarantee you that. Well, we'll talk a little bit more about that, maybe some college football. We'll get back into the PGA Tour. We'll do a PGA Tour update. We'll talk about the FedEx Cup coming up. It goes from 125 to 75 to 30 at Eastlake. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. All right, and we're back to Southern Fairways Radio Show, live here in Locksley, Alabama, at the beautiful Steelwood community, the Stewart Lodges out here at Steelwood Country Club. Joined here with David Musial from Glen Lakes, general manager, and of course our buddy Doug Holton. This last that last segment, we talked a little bit, and we kept talking throughout the break, guys, and about kind of where our head's spinning with this college football season and all that, and how kids are going back to school, but a lot of the classes are virtual or online when they get there, and what are they going to do? I guess they're going to be ready. David, you mentioned your daughter can't wait to get back in there. I mean, just can't wait.
Yeah, I think that it's just the anticipation of when that does come, where that the students do have to go back and stay in the stay in the dorms and It's just an odd time. I think that the colleges and the high schools, the local ones, are doing a great job of trying to keep everything as safe as they can. But there's just some things that we're not able to avoid with the pandemic. But I think everybody is just kind of on pins and needles as when that time comes to where you're going to possibly be sent home. And the same as far as with our sports coming up, the ones that are open, the things that are going on right now with football, where there'll be a problem of where a team where, several or more of them or, coaching staffs have COVID and they can't play. But, I think we're doing the best that we can to get back into it. And I'm glad to see that we are, able to start moving forward with some sports.
How'd you like that right there? That was pretty good, wasn't it? Of course, that was our Jason Young State Farm guest line jingle. And we are not caller-driven, but we are caller-friendly, guys. So if you want to call in and chime in on this conversation, you can give us a call at 343-0106, 343-0106. Of course, our buddy Randy is in Montgomery, Texas. He's going to give us a call here in a little bit, get us caught up on things. But I'll tell you what, right now, let's try this here. Let's see what we got here. Ladies and gentlemen, it's now time for your PGA Tour update, brought to you by Bridgestone Golf and the GCGA Tour.
Are we doing the PGA Tour?
Yes, we are.
I was on the FedEx Cup point standings.
No, you're okay. Go ahead. Go ahead, buddy.
We're talking about the PGA Tour. Of course, Siwoo Kim is leading at the Wyndham Championship, and a number of guys chasing him as they tee off pretty soon. It's going to be an exciting race. I was looking at the FedEx Cup point standings, Danny, and I think Siwoo Kim is 121, mm-hmm. and Rob Oppenheim, as we were talking about, is 145. So there's going to be a lot of back and forth to see who finishes well in Greensboro. It's going to have a big effect on who moves on to the FedEx Championships.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, of course, as we look at that, you know, after we finish today, next week we go to the Northern Trust, where that 125 will be playing up in Boston, Massachusetts, at TPC Boston. Olympic Fields, that 125 goes down to 75 for the BMW Championship. Of course, they're going to be Olympic Fields in Illinois, which is going to be a great venue. And then out of that 75, David, the top 30 will go to Eastlake for the Tour Championship. As we look at the Champions Tour, Bridgestone Senior Players Championship in Akron, Ohio, on top of leaderboard. Right now we have a tie. Jerry Kelly's at 3-under par. He is 1-under through his round through two holes. Scott Parrell is 2-under. He's birdied his first two holes to tie Jerry Kelly at the top of the leaderboard. Woody Austin is 2 back at 1-under par. Miguel Angel Jimenez, even par, along with Colin Montgomery as their 3 back to start their round as well. Of course, in the LPGA Tour, congratulations to Stacey Lewis as she wins in a playoff on the first hole to win the Aberdeen Standard Investments Ladies Scottish Open. It was a great win for Stacey Lewis. She held off three other players in the first hole, as she birdied the first hole in the playoff, Dave, take home that beautiful Scottish Open trophy. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is your PGA Tour update and your golf update from around the world, brought to you by Bridgestone Golf and the GCGA Tour. All right, let's get back to a little bit of golf. Of course, the U.S. Amateurs concludes today, gang. The final is between SMU Junior, Ali Osborne. I just love that name, Ali Osborne. Do you ever watch Jack and Ozzy's World Tour? You ever watch that on TV? Ever seen that?
I haven't seen that one.
Jack Osborne, Ozzy Osborne.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They have a reality show.
Yeah.
They travel around in a motorhome and just check things out and go do different things. One of my favorite shows. Interesting dynamic.
Ali Osborne.
Big Ozzy Osborne fan growing up, I was. That kind of explains a little bit about my childhood. Of course, Ali Osborne will be playing. His dad, Steve, is going to be on the bag. And he's going to be playing against Tyler Strafacci, who's my friend Tammy's favorite player now. He gave a great interview yesterday. He's a strapping young man, very humble young man. He's from Georgia Tech. He was going to turn pro. He actually thought that his amateur career was over because of the pandemic and all this, and then he got a chance to go qualify for the U.S. Amateur. They ended up having it. And, of course, he finds himself in the final state against Ali Osborne. Tyler Strafacci comes from a very prolific golf background. His grandfather played in 16 USGA events, which a lot of people don't know about. He actually won the 1935 or 36 U.S. United States Publinks Championship and then played in 16 USGA competitions. His dad played in 3 USAMs, made it to match play one time, of course. Then there are the son right here, Tyler, who's made it into the finals, who will get an invite to play in the 2021 U.S. Open and more than likely the 21 Masters Tournament if he remains an amateur. When you look at the history of some of the U.S. amateur winners, they've got on to such great success on the PGA Tour. It is probably, in my opinion, the single hardest championship to win. And the fact that you have to do a local qualifier for the most part, you go to a regional qualifier or sectional, and then you make it into a 36-hole stroke play qualifier, and then you get into a round of 64 match play, in which you have to win 6 consecutive matches to take home the big trophy. And the fact that Tiger Woods did that 3 years in a row, along with the 3 previous years, 3 United States Junior USGA Championships, where he won 6 USGA Championships in a row, I think is a feat. Even though I think his consecutive cuts total will never be met ever on the PGA Tour, I definitely think 6 consecutive USGA events will never be topped either. And, of course, showing some live golf on the TV, this beautiful TV we got here in the lodge. And there looks like a group of pugs have made their way out onto the golf course. Harold Varner III on.
They had a stop where a lady walked across with her dog.
You know, that happens. Now it's funny. And
PGA
and
Tour.
This is what I love about live radio, especially when we're watching live golf as well. David, you've run a public golf facility for a long time in different ones. You see all kinds of stuff, and it doesn't matter if you're at Sedgefield or Glen Lakes. The homeowners will be homeowners.
Oh, yeah. Well, and you think about that golf courses are surrounded by homes and communities. I mean, mm-hmm. you look everywhere around. You know, this is really an interesting situation here where it's so secluded. But your majority of your golf courses that you've got, you know, residential communities around and a little bit of everything. And that's what helps, you know, support the club. You have the activity out there. But, yeah, you just saw there on a PGA Tour event where you had a lady and her dog walk right across where players were about to stay off.
Yeah, just walked right across fairway and said, don't mind me. I'm just walking my dog out here. Now, Doug, we talk about this United States Amateur. They're going to get kicked off here a little bit later. It's a 36-hole finals match against Young Strafaci and Ollie Osborne. You know, when you think of SMU, you don't necessarily right off the bat think about, you know, golf superstars. You know, the most famous one as of late has been Bryson DeChambeau. Mm. And I think not only his golf performance, but also just who he was, you know, the mad professor.
Right.
You know, the first time we'd ever heard of anybody having the same length golf clubs all the way through from his wedge to his driver.
Mm-hmm.
Jumbo grips. I mean, when I say jumbo grips, I mean jumbo grips.
Yeah.
And just his methodical, analytical way of playing golf. And, of course, it's his U.S. Amateur Championship along with his NCAA Individual Championship. We thought he was a mad scientist back then. He's taking it to a next level now.
And we were right.
Yeah.
Weren't we?
Yeah, we were.
But it made me think of when you were talking about the amateur and dads caddying for their sons. And Georgia Tech made me think back to Matt Kuchar.
Yeah.
Did he win the AM?
I believe Matt Kuchar did win.
Anyway, he played in the Masters with his dad caddying.
Yeah.
So, yeah, lots of history there. It's a great tournament. And, you know, speaking of Sedgefield and the community around it made me think back of – I can't remember what year it was, but one year I was out on the golf course there, I think, and they flip-flopped the nine since I was a kid. So it was 13, I think, is a little dog leg to the left. And it started just pouring rain and thundering and lightning. And I wound up in the garage right off the course with Tom Weisskopf, you know, standing right next to Tom Weisskopf. And I'm
how about that?
10 years old or something like that. That was one of the memorable golf things of my childhood, I guess.
People listening don't realize how great Weisskopf was.
Yeah. Oh,
he was going to be like the next Nicklaus. I mean,
oh,
he was great. And
Jack Nicklaus.
Stretch of time, he really was.
And Jack didn't come to the GGO back then because it was the week before the Masters, so mm-hmm. Weisskopf was probably the biggest name there.
Mm-hmm. You know, you think about back in that era, and you talk about Weisskopf, and of course we remember the names Watson and you know, of course Nicklaus and Player and Trevino and all that. But do we look at that next level right there? And we really thought the ushering in. And one thing I loved about the PGA Championship and talking about Harding Park was. Jaime Diaz did a great backstory piece on the history of amateur golf in that San Francisco area. And when we were talking about Big George Archer, we were talking about all these great players, Johnny Miller mm-hmm. and all those guys, Ken Venturi, coming through that area, all playing amateur golf at one time. In fact, they had a junior tournament. They were all 16, 17, 18 years old. And five players in that junior tournament went on to win majors.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you kind of think about that, and it's just it's pretty striking. But some great players back then. Parity now? I don't know. Does new Metal Woods have anything to do with it? The golf ball versus back then? Were you a better player back then when you had to use a softball and a wooden club, David?
It's hard to say. Well, it's hard to say.
And hit a 7-iron instead of a 9-iron?
There you go.
Wedge.
Well, I'll tell you what. Coming up in the next segment, we're going to get a tip from you, David. We'll be right back. Let that roll just a little bit right there. That's got a good little groove to it. All right. Well, we're back on Southern Fairways Radio Show. I'm your host, Danny Spivey. Filling in for my buddy, Randall Bergen, who's in Montgomery, Texas, playing a little golf. Unlike Conroe. Of course, I'm joined by David Musial and Doug Holton here. Been with me for the last hour and a half. We've got about a half hour left, guys. And, you know, we've had some really good conversations between breaks. And, you know, just talking about some of the great players back then. We were, you know, we had talked about Tom Weisskopf a little bit, but, you know, started talking about Johnny Miller, how great he was. John Cook, how great he was coming out of Ohio State. Joey Sindelar. A lot of those golfers like that that went on and just – you know, for whatever reason, and I talk to Randy all the time about this because he's such a huge Phil Mickelson fan. And, of course, Phil has nothing to prove in the game of golf. He's won, you know, over 40 times. He's won five majors. And he's finished runner-up in the U.S. Open six times. And I keep telling him, he's like, every year he keeps picking Phil Mickelson to win the U.S. Open. And he said, he's due. Golf owes him. And I was like, let me tell you something. Golf doesn't owe anybody anything. It's a very romantic sport. It has a lot of, you know, entices a lot of people to watch it. It has great storylines. But you can go through the annals of history of the game of golf and where people, you know, just have fallen short in majors for some reason. One of the best comments I ever heard in the 86 Masters on Sunday when Nicklaus was on 16 tee box and he was getting ready to hit that infamous shot that hit behind the hole and came down just after he'd made eagle on 15 and he was making that big charge. And Tom Weisskopf was the announcer. And David, I don't know if you remember, and somebody asked him, he says, Tom, what do you think Jack's thinking about right now? He goes, if I knew that, I would have won this tournament a long time ago.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And that's always stuck home, and that was, you know, 34 years ago or whatever. And I remember it like it was yesterday that somebody as great and as accomplished as a golfer as Tom Weisskopf could not get it done in certain circumstances because he just didn't quite think like Jack Nicklaus.
And you talked about Tiger Woods also and Jack Nicklaus. Obviously, those two guys – from the mental aspect of organizing the golf course and being mentally tough. I mean, that's the difference when you get to that level, don't you think?
Well, it's totally. And so when you look at a young player like Colin Morikawa, and, you know, when you see what he did, the way he handled himself down, he was not playing that great early in the round. Even though he shot 64, he had a couple mishaps, but he made two putts for par over 15 feet in the first six holes, which are monumental. Then he had the great chip in on 16, and then, you know, of course, went on to make a few more birdies down the road. And, of course, the eagle on 16. But he seems to have that look or that mindset. You know, early on, Jordan Spieth, when he came out, he had that mindset as well. Things seemed to come easy. He knew he was going to make those 8-9-foot par putts and make the birdies when you have to. Because it's all about opportunity when you look at all the tournaments that Jack or Tiger have won or some of these that have won multiple majors. There's always a certain point in the round, David, that the player knows, the commentators pick up on, especially, you know, Nance and Sir Nick Faldo, they pick up on this, that a certain putt early in the round is more important than some other shots coming down the stretch.
It's a level of confidence. It's a level, you know, that you can see, you know, as far as in their, you know, in their demeanor of how they go along with their business. You know, you look at Tiger Woods throughout his career, and when he, you know, and just with, of winning this last Masters, of that he willed his way through with his experience. You look at like Dustin Johnson, how many times in majors has he finished second now? You know, is he going to be able to, you know, to close the deal in majors? You look at Finau right now where he struggles. How many great second places has he had? How many top tens has he has without winning? I mean, he's unbelievable how many, you know, but it's that, you know, closing the deal the way that Morikawa did and, you know, going about his business and going about his plan and that level of confidence. And, you know, that's the difference. They've been through the test of time. This is kind of a retro show. You know,
yeah, it is.
About, as far as the different things of us going through different times in our life when we played golf and those things that we remember. I remember, you know, Jack Nicklaus, he was 46 when he won that Masters, and he seemed old then. You know, 46 is young. You know, you feel like now, and as we get older, you look at Phil Mickelson, how long he has hung around.
Hitting bombs.
God, it's amazing. We were so used to him being in contention for so long that we don't think about the fact of him being 50 years old. But it's, you know, this young group of guys we just mentioned, Morikawa, Matthew Wolf, Hovland, that these guys are I think that's going to be the next run of great players, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch this FedEx Cup.
Well, Doug, throwing it over to you, too, and I'm going to kind of throw this into one of the things we were talking about at the break as well, is you made a comment that, you know, we weren't real sure when the PGA Tour reopened without fans, you know, how we were going to receive that. And I get this feeling, especially during the PGA Championship, me as someone who, like everybody else who listens to the show, and I think the fan base is growing exponentially, and I think it will grow exponentially even more coming up here in these next 3 or 4 months with the way the tour schedule is going. But it made me think when I was watching, it got me so involved in watching the way people think, because all the external things were taken out. It's almost like we went into the mind of the golfer.
Yes.
Okay? Where it made me think, like, people like Tiger Woods or Justin Thomas when he was rolling, or Jordan Spieth, or, you know, some of the ones that have won multiple majors, okay? And Rory McIlroy, you know, several years ago, where they zoned out everything. You know, even though Tiger Woods had the big fist pumps, I really think he was fist pumping for himself, because he had achieved, when he made a 15 or 20-foot birdie putt, he read it correctly, struck it correctly, and he knew the moment was important, and he executed it. Now, the fact there was 50,000 people around him was just an added benefit. But I'm really think, and I hope that as we watch these FedEx Cup and we get into the next major of the U.S. Open and into the Masters, that I believe people are going to start grasping a better on how golfers think when they get under pressure. And I thought we saw that with Colin Morikawa.
Yeah, I think so. And that's exactly how I feel when I'm watching the golf on TV. You feel like there's no crowd there, but you feel like you're out there playing golf. It's mm-hmm. quiet. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things you love about golf, you're on the golf course, you're not thinking about anything else. You're just sitting there watching golf, and you're not all hyped up, but you're just watching and thinking, like you said, and maybe trying to get in the player's head and think, what are they thinking? You know, it's very interesting to watch it without fans out there.
And I think, too, there were some comments made, you know, by some of the PGA Tour players, which I agreed, you know, for the most part, that some of the younger players may have an advantage when there's not that many fans out there, because they don't really feel the pressure of a Tiger in contention or something. And let's face it, as great as Tiger was, Tiger probably won 5 of his 15 majors just through the sheer noise that follows him around a golf course, and people, when he made a birdie, just that immediate effect it had on certain players out there. Guys like Matt Kuchar, Chris DeMarco comes to mind. Chris DeMarco had fabulous battles against Tiger Woods. You know, we go back to the infamous chip in on 16 at Augusta when he was dead left, and he hits probably the most unbelievable chip I've seen under that circumstance. And Chris DeMarco was sitting there 8 feet from birdie, hit a fabulous shot, and he had no chance of making it afterwards.
Yeah.
There was no chance. There was no chance. And so, you know, you look at guys like John Rahm, and you look at Colin Morikawa, Webb Simpson. Well, let's take Colin since he's won one already. But take like a Webb Simpson who's won one, but a John Rahm who hasn't won one yet, or Bryson DeChambeau who hasn't won one yet. Those are the type of players, I think, that have the mental fortitude that will eventually get to a major championship. But you never know. You got guys like Matt Kuchar having won one. You look at great players like Davis Love, who only won one. Great players like Freddie Couples, World Golf Hall of Famers, only won one major. And then you got a goofball, one of my buddies, John Daly, won two. You know, yeah. Two different ones, just yeah. Out of nowhere.
And some of those guys have a Players' Championship in there, too. But I think the three guys that David mentioned are going to be really hard to beat in the next 5 years. Those are three young, talented players. And you know, I quite frankly, I see them bypassing a number of these guys that are in their 30s and 40s in the chase for major championships.
I agree. Well, David, we have a few minutes left talking about pressure. Let's relieve some of the pressure of some of our guest listener, our listeners out there. Have you thought about kind of a tip about playing in the wind? If they watch a U.S. amateur today, they get to see a lot of wind out in Oregon. What can we do to help these people out?
Well, a couple different things we've hit on in watching our tour events that where we don't have the fans, and you know, that's similar to the way a lot of us play golf. You know, we've played, you know, junior golf or college golf or even, you know, some mini tour golf, where there's no one out there. It's just you and the golf course and your fellow competitors. And that is something where, as far as with us going through our routine, going through the same things that we do when we're playing well, when we're playing in the wind, what we don't want to do is try to overpower the wind. We don't want to try to swing harder. We don't want to have to hit through the wind. What we want to do is we want to take more club. We want to choke down on the club. We want to swing easier. We want to take a golf swing where we just talked earlier about Boo Weekly. He was one of the best at being able to narrow that stance a little bit and choke it down, take a three-quarter swing, take one more club, and be able to work through that wind. And to be a good player, you've got to be able to hit the ball at different trajectories. We talked about, you know, being able to hit high shots, and also, too, as far as being able to hit low shots and be able to shape it. But you don't want it to try to fight through it. We want to take more club. We want to go with an easier golf swing. Shaft leaning forward is going to be able to help that ball flight stay down a little bit. And you know, that's something that can help you on these windy days.
Well, you've heard that phrase, when it's breezy, swing easy.
That's it. Got some breeze today.
And yeah, there is a little breeze today. And, you know, one of the things I think it's very undervalued for amateur golfers of all levels, the importance of hitting the ball solid.
Correct.
You know, whether or not, you know, it's a three-quarter shot or, you know, when we look, and I was having this playing lesson with my son last night, and we play these last four holes a lot. We call it the horn out here. We play 15, 16, 17, 18, two par fours, a par three, and a par five. So we kind of get to hit all kind of different shots. And, you know, there was a little headwind in out here on this beautiful 15th hole, about 135, and we talked a little bit about the importance of hitting a solid shot, choking to, instead of maybe hitting the you know, full nine iron, let's choke down an inch on the eight iron. Let's make sure we make solid contact with the golf ball to allow it to fly correctly into the wind. And we hit about three or four shots, and my goodness, what a difference. And it was a neat teaching moment.
That's
to great. Where it kind of sat in. And I think a lot of players out there that, you know, are 15, 18, 20 handicaps, they get out on the golf course and they feel when the wind blows, just like you said, man, I got to bow up on this one, swing as hard as I can. Take a little extra club, choke down a little bit, concentrate on just hitting it solid if you can.
You hit it with an open club face when you're into the wind and see what happens to that. You
know, yeah,
that
exactly.
Wind coming in your face accentuates that side spin. So you hit that good solid contact, good square club face.
Well, that's good stuff. You know, we're probably going to hear from Randy here in this next segment, and I bet it gets windy in Texas.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I played out in Texas years and years ago in Fort Worth and played at a place called Southwind. Or not Southwind. It was a different court. I'm thinking of Memphis, but it was in Fort Worth, Texas. I played with a guy named Lindy Miller. He's an All-American, played at Texas A&M. Great, great player. Our Oklahoma State player, but he lived there. He was the head professional there. Played in the USAM, you know, very accomplished player. And he used to give me all kind of tips on playing in the wind. And he had one of these phenomenal shots. He was 145 yards, wind blowing about 25 miles an hour. And he choked down on a forearm on the back of his feet and hit it about knee height to about 6 feet from the hole. And I was like, I got to learn that shot.
Shaft leaning forward.
That's right. Yep. All right, well, we're going to come back and wrap this thing up with a big old bow. See if we can get a hold of Randy. See what he's doing. He's in Texas. Hope he's not lost. We'll be back real soon.
Hi, this is David Musial, PGA professional at Glen Lakes Golf Club. Here's a quick tip for you. When you're getting ready to play golf, clear your mind, think about having fun, and enjoy the thought of 27 holes of great golf at Glen Lakes Golf Club. For lessons and tee times, call 251-955-1220. Glen Lakes Golf Club, just 6 miles north of the beaches in Foley.
All right, and welcome back to Southern Fairways Radio Show. I am Danny, that's David, and that's Doug. And let's go to this right now. All right, let's welcome to the phone line. Oh, it's not Randy from Texas. It's my buddy, Bama Tim. Bama Tim, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, brother, how you doing? You sound a little peaky today. I know you're out there at Steelwood. They ain't starving you, are you? I know you're getting used to Boone's cooking all the time.
I'm going to tell you. Let me tell you, Bama Tim. It is one of those things. The only good thing, I love this place out here at Steelwood. Of course, I live out here, and it's a short commute for me. But I'll tell you, I missed I'm missing Boom's Kitchen so much because I'm used to that 11-1 feast every Sunday. And I just didn't get it this week because Randall's out of town.
Well, I tell you what we're going to do one of these days, buddy. We're going to have to set y'all up a remote from Bama Tim's house, and we'll cook out on the grill. How about that?
How about that?
That sounds great. I love that. We'll do a remote out there for sure. We'll bring the Can we bring the cameras?
Oh, man, don't bring me cameras. I'd have to put my mask back on. But
you can just bring the grill out here.
David, I love the answers to my Golf for Dummies questions that you're doing.
Great.
There was one thing that you missed on the first question about the scoring that maybe you can elaborate today. But next week's question is going to go right along with this week's answer. Is what are irons and what is the ratio of loft to distance as far as a 1 iron, a 9 iron, a 7 iron? What is a pitching wedge? What is a sand wedge? So we can get into that next week. I love your answers. But the one thing that you didn't answer for me, brother, is when you say I shot a 72, I don't know what that means. How were you supposed to score? But
for,
anyway.
for the expert player, most pars are 72. So that would be just your expert. That's a very small, you know, less than 3% of all golfers.
Okay, well that's the answer I was looking for.
But Danny's there. He's right there around 72.
What were you doing 51 years ago today?
Well, goodness, 51 years ago today. Are you, who you asked, David or me or who?
All of you guys.
Okay, I was just over one.
I was not quite born. I'm 50.
Okay.
51 years ago today, I can't remember.
What were you doing, Bam Tim?
Well, I was four, and I was getting ready for Hurricane Camille.
How about that? That was today. Was that 51 years ago today?
Estimated wind gust estimated to 190 miles an hour. 20-plus foot storm surge, the second most intense hurricane to hit the United States. And, you know, it finally weakened to a tropical depression by the time it hit Virginia.
That is, I mean, that when you go back and, you know, of course, all of us have lived down here on the Gulf Coast for as long as we have, you know, and dealing with hurricanes, you know, you go back to, gosh, Frederick and all that, and of course, Katrina and some of the big ones. But, man, you talk some of these old-timers down this way, buddy. Hurricane Camille was something else.
Yeah, it was a tremendous storm, and it killed 250 people. But, you know, like I say, well, let's get back to something more important and a little bit more happier. But
yeah, it was the year of Miracle Mets too, 69.
Hey, I don't care who ain't playing football this year. We playing football this year. I believe the SEC is going to play and the ACC is going to play. And if nobody else plays, we don't have to have a championship because all the other ones don't count anyway because they were not going to be in it anyhow.
Bold.
That, you know, it's funny you say that because one of the memes, of course, you know, half my blood goes to the Buckeyes because I grew up there and I still have a bunch of friends up there. But, you know, I was born a Buckeye but raised a Bama fan. So, you know, it's one of those things. But I kind of sent a couple pot shots at a couple of them and said, well, you know, I'm sorry that they canceled the season for you, but it probably saved you some misery.
Probably so. All right, you guys, y'all have a great day. And let me give it to you one more time. Roll.
Give it to me, buddy.
I'd roll.
All right, that was our buddy Bama Tim. Let me tell you something. I think you may have be on to something there. You know, when we talk about Golf for Dummies, we may have to really go to like
the more basic program. Four degrees difference between clubs.
Yeah, when we started talking coefficients, you know I love you, David. We started talking about coefficients and CC radius and centimeters and everything. You know, I think Bama Tim just wondering, okay, what's a hook? What's a slice? You know, and maybe we can talk about. But, you know, I'm kidding, but it's a good thing. You know, the average handicap, and the last time I looked this up, average handicap of golfers who play more than 15 rounds a year, okay, is 18.8. That's the average handicap. 18.8. So I want you to kind of keep that in your mind. And then, like you said, less than 3% are scratch golfers.
Mm-hmm. 1 and 2 iron are for killing snakes.
1 and 2 iron are for killing snakes.
That's why they have hybrids now.
Which, there's another golf for dummies right there tip. You know, when if you're out playing, you're not used to playing, you're down on the Gulf Coast, let me tell you something. You go down there and start searching for your ball by the water, you better take some kind of club with you, huh, Duck?
Yeah, or one of those little retriever deals. You could use that too, right?
Yeah, just to say, don't go trumping. It's not worth the... Even
you don't want to run into the gators, or
now I will go chase a brand new Bridgestone golf ball down there.
I'll say this that about the long irons. We talked about the 1 and 2 irons that were replaced by hybrids. Now, I was in a seminar in 2007, and Barney Adams said that these things are going to take over. And he said, "You guys think they look odd now? Everybody's going to be playing them, and the tour players.
The hybrids.
And where are we now?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you, it's golf has come a long way back to from when." I can just think, you know, it's so funny keeping perspective on just golf, but in life in general. And, you know, Buckeye is still kicking around really good. And, you know, he's up there and he's seen a lot. And we go back to some of the old baseball players. He's a big fan of your great uncle, you know, and all those baseball players back in that era. And as they moved on and just the tremendous talent so many of them had. And then you look at the game of golf and where golf has gone and to see that perspective on you know, as we watch golf through the years and then see young guys like Colin Morikawa or Jordan Spieth or Rory McIlroy or Brooks Koepka, the different sizes of these golfers nowadays, and just compare it to the old days, you know. You don't see too many Roger Maltbys out there.
No, not you know? Much more athletic today.
But when I see them, I give them kudos.
Yes.
You know, because, you know, I like to sit down and have a good steak with, you know, people like that.
But you're right that the player today, that's one thing that Tiger Woods brought to golf was fitness. Mm. I mean, you look at those guys out there, they've got good posture, they're, you know, in good shape, they did workouts when they get through, all the preparation that they do, that's one of the biggest changes.
And by no means am I picking on Roger Maltby. It just, his mind came to me because I'll never forget that first, he was the inaugural winner of the Memorial Tournament in 76, and he had on the single most classic pair of pants.
Is it the Michelob bag?
Yeah, had the Michelob bag.
I like that.
You know, those plaid checkered pants that look like a quilt. And, you know, that hair going all over, the big fluffy mustache. And he had his glasses on when he played. Just classic Roger Maltby.
There was golf back then. I mean, those were the golfers, mm-hmm. You know. Fuzzy Zeller.
Oh, absolutely.
Billy Casper
going all the way back there. All right, we got a few minutes left, guys. I'm gonna ask you something. It looks like Randy's having some technical difficulties with his phone. He's not getting a very good signal. But Randall, if you can hear us, you know, just remember, you know, just channel the inner Freddie Couples, outside in, set those hands, create lag, and then accelerate through the golf ball, right hip finishing towards the target, please.
He may not have enough money to pay his cell bill after that round. So,
well, I'm gonna tell you what he's got Randy will surprise you now. Randy's sneaky. You can't hide money sometimes. But when we look at this tournament right now, the Wyndham Championship, we get in there. We've got some guys we're rooting for. I'm gonna root for Oppenheim. I want him to make it into the FedEx Cup. Right now, he's trending up to about 109, but he's got to finish in the top five, so he's got to play a pretty solid round. He's 2 back of Siwoo Kim. Looks like Siwoo Kim, unless he goes kind of ballistic today, that he's probably going to be in there. It's hard to follow up a 62. Both those guys shot 62 yesterday. It's hard to shoot a back-to-back, you know, low round, but we'll see. But everybody played well yesterday. Jim Herman shoots 61, so we're going to see what happens. Who do you like in this? Does anybody want to make a pick? Billy Horschel's right there.
I like Horschel.
Yeah, I like him. He's at 1,500. He's 3 back. I think he shoots 64 today.
Did you see Siwoo Kim make the hole-in-one on 3 yesterday and lip out for a hole-in-one on 12?
Yeah,
in the same round.
Wow.
Yeah.
Bring it up. Quick trivia question. Last person to have on the PGA Tour to have 2 hole-in-ones in the same round. Do you remember? 2015.
Ian Baker Finch, I know, had 2.
Brian Herman had 2.
Did he?
2015.
Okay. Yeah.
How about that? Well, gang, I'm going to tell you what. I really had a lot of fun today. It was a quick 2 hours. I appreciate you coming up here and spending time with me, David.
Enjoyed it. Yeah.
Doug, appreciate it.
It was great, Danny. Always fun.
All right, buddy. Well, Randy, get back to us soon, buddy, because my contract will let me do this by myself 2 weeks in a row. So make your way back safely. Tell all the boys we said hi. And for all those out there, as always, use your golf etiquette. You know, there's no rakes in the bunker, so just use your foot, okay? But have a good time out there. Get out there and play golf. and be nice to your neighbors. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week.